All right, so we're on Kuf Chav Ches, and if you count up from the bottom, it's approximately, I'd say, just guessing, about 12 lines up, the two dots Itmar. Basar Moliach. It's the first word in the line is Chashi. Kuf Chav Ches, yeah, 128A. Okay, so we're talking about raw meat on Shabbos, and the question is whether it's mukt or not. So it hasn't been cooked, but the Gemara says that there are two stages. One stage is salting, and the other stage is pure raw meat. So we have the following machlokas here. It says that Itmar Basar Moliach, if it's already been salted, is Mutar L'Taltalo B'Shabbos. In other words, once it's been salted, the meat is a little bit soft. The salting process softens up the meat, and it is edible. Again, it's not something that you and I would eat, but if need be, for whatever reason, that's what you have, you could eat it. You know, it's like, it reminds me of sushi and fish. So he says here that once it's salted, roi hu l'achila al yedei hadchak, afilu below bishul. That even without cooking, once it's been salted, then it could be that you could eat it. And he rejects another interpretation. Apparently someone had suggested that maybe the process of salting here is to remove the blood. No. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about a case where the blood was already removed. The salting is just to soften up the meat so that it's edible. And if it's edible, then it's not muktzah and mutar l'taltal. Now we get to the second category, which is called basar tofel. She'eino maluach, v'eino roi l'achila klal. We would say that it's not edible at all. And the question is, can you feed it to a dog? Because the Gemara has established that if you have food that's edible to an animal, and it's fit for animal consumption, then it's not muktzah. So Rav Huna Omar, mutar l'taltalo. And even though it's not roi l'achilas adam, it's not humanly consumable, if we can use that word, it's not fit for human consumption, then perhaps you could feed raw meat to a dog. Again, usually a dog, I don't think, would eat raw meat. You know, the dogs that I'm familiar with are pretty finicky. But nevertheless, it's not muktzah. That's the shita of Rav Huna. And Rav Chisda Amar, he disagrees, and he says, Asa l'taltalo, that it has a status of muktzah. Now, there's a machlokes between Rav Yehuda and Rav Shimon Tanoim with regard to muktzah. And Rav Yehuda says that unless something is specifically prepared for use on Shabbos, then it's muktzah. Rav Shimon, on the other hand, holds that if it could be used, even though you didn't prepare it for such, then it's not muktzah. The Gemara is going to, later on, we didn't get to it yet, is going to try to put a perspective on the machlokas Rav Huna Rav Chisda about raw meat into a broader perspective of the machlokas between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda in muktzah. So let's take a look at the next Gemara. I just want to add one note over here. The according to Rabbi Yehuda, basically you're guilty until you're proven innocent. Everything is muktzah unless you specifically designate it for use. Now raw, unsalted meat is not designated for achilas adam. And therefore, surely, according to Rabbi Yehuda, it should be muktzah. Rav Shimon, on the other hand, holds that everything is innocent until proven guilty, meaning as long as it could be used, it shouldn't be mukta. But on the other hand, when we're talking about unsalted raw meat, then Rav Shimon Lechora would say that if it's unfit for human consumption, then it should be mukta. Even according to Rav Shimon, it has no use. It's like eitzim v'avanim, you know, like stones or wood, which you can't use on Shabbos for anything. And even Rav Shimon agrees that that's mukta. That's called mukta machmas gufa. This raw piece of meat that's not even salted should be mukta machmas gufa. Unless we introduce the element of animals, you know, that it could be possibly fit for animal consumption. That might be a salvaging factor as far as Rav Shimon is concerned. So the Gemara now questions this assumption that Rav Huna is going to allow you to be metaltal. So the Gemara says, Rav Huna amar mutal etaltalo? Va Rav Huna talmid de Rav Hava? Rav Huna is the outstanding disciple of Rav. Rav k'Rav Yehuda svirle, di isle mukta. Rav accepts the shita of Rav Yehuda, and that everything is mukta unless you specifically prepare it. You don't prepare unsalted meat, and therefore surely unsalted meat should be mukta. And it sounds like Rav Huna could be, we can only make sense out of Rav Huna if we introduce Rabbi Shimon. But Rav Huna as a Talmud of Rav, who's the post of the, he's the great Amora that Paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, how can he accept that there's no mukta? So Gemara answers, b'mukta l'achila savrala k'Rav Yehuda, u'b'mukta l'tiltil savrala k'Rav Shimon. There are two dimensions these are mukta. One is tiltul and one is achila. The one that's more chamur is achila. When the Rabbanan established mukta as a rabbinic prohibition, a rabbinic enterprise, they did it in two stages. Stage number one is mukta l'achila, and that's a very severe kind of isur. And then they expanded it to a less strict isur, which includes even tiltul. And Rav accepted a kind of split, a kind of compromise with regard to mukta l'achila, which is more chamur. He's going to go with Rabbi Yehuda, and it's forbidden to eat mukta. And with regard to tiltul, which, as we said before, is a lesser degree, there he's going to agree with Rav Shimon. He's going to pass like Rav Shimon and accept a more liberal or lenient interpretation of mukta, and he's going to paskin like Rav Shimon. Now, if this be the case, then let's go back to Rav Huna. Rav Huna is a Talmud of Rav. Rav Huna says, if we go back to the original, that Bosa Tofel Mutal Etaltalo. He never said that it was Mutal Bachila. As far as Achila is concerned, he's going to paskin like Rav, his Rebbe, who paskins like Rav Yehuda, that Mutal Achila is Asur. However, with regard to Tiltul, here he's more lenient because he accepts the Shita of Rav, who passes like Rav Shimon, with regard to Mukta L'Tiltul. So you're allowed to be Metaltul Basa Tofel, but you're not allowed to eat it. That's the bottom line here in Rav Huna. Now we're going to ask a question on Rav Chisda. Rav Chisda Omar also L'Taltulo? Rav Chisda says that you're not allowed to be Metaltul Basa Tofel. How could that be? V'harav Yitzchak bar Ami Ikla Lebe Rav Chisda. So in a certain encounter between Rav Yitzchak and Rav Chisda, Chaza Hu bar Arvza, he saw some sort of a duck that was already shechted, and the Omar, just 1 second, I lost the place, yeah. The Havakah Metaltalei Mishimsha Litula, and he saw that the servants were carrying this piece of raw duck from the sun into the shade. V'yomer Rav Chisda, and Rav Chisda said to them, Chisarin kis kachazinin acha. I see here a case of financial loss. In other words, if they leave it in the sun, it's going to get ruined, and it's expensive, an expensive piece of duck, maybe Empire chickens, I don't know. And Rav Chisda basically allows you to move it, even though it's raw, it's unsalted, it's natural, you know, duck. And that's because of hefseh, because of chisaron kis, to avoid financial loss. Here, in the case of raw meat, Rav Chisda prohibited taking it from one place to another, an isur tiltul. So Gemara answers, Shani bar Avza, dechazi leumtza. The reason why Rav Chisda was more liberal and he allowed the movement of this raw meat is because in the case of duck, you can eat duck that's raw. Raw duck. It's tender and you can eat it raw. And therefore it's not muktza. So if you have a duck that's soft, that's tender, and it could be eaten raw, even without salting it, Rav Chisda is going to allow it. He's going to be matir tiltul. But in the case of meat that comes from, you know, from a piece of beef of an animal, then it, without malicha, it's not royal achila, and therefore it's asur betiltul. I have a note here that he says v'hu adin b'chol of, any kind of a bird which has a tender kind of meat, mutal etaltalo, you're allowed to move it even if it's raw, mishum sheroy la'ochlo chai, you can eat it raw. But basar behema, is there the basar is tough, it requires cooking, and at least salting at the very minimum, and therefore, asar av chizdo etaltalo. That's what we have over here. Now, what I'm confused about is that when Rav Chisda pointed out to his servants that he saw them taking in this duck meat from the sun into the shade, and he said to them, Chisaron kis kachazinon hacha. In other words, well, what does it mean? Chisaron kis kachazin and hacha. I'll read to you the B. It says, "Hoy bnei abayis metalten oso mi makom shezochal of shemesh makom atzel." They took it in so it shouldn't get spoiled. And the reason for that is because Rav Chisda told them that there's a chisaron kis over here. So, what do we see from this story of Rav Chisda in the raw duck that he allowed tiltul of raw meat? But the only thing that bothers me here is if it's duck, and we just finished saying that duck is kind of tender, and it could be eaten raw, why does he have to introduce this element of chisaron kis? That's why I don't understand. I'm trying to see if I can find anything here. I have the Masifti, I'm looking here in the notes. So far I'm not finding anything. Let's see Nun Gimel, maybe he'll say something. He says, Mikan muchach, sha'af bosa shalo nimlach. If you have a kind of meat that's this is already a different discussion here. He wants to know about malicha, whether you're allowed to eat it without salting it. Because apparently the whole discussion here is whether or not it's roi l'achila or not roi l'achila, but everybody agrees that you could eat it as far as kashrus laws is concerned. So that's the issue here. It's basar shelo nimlach. So it could be that in certain cases, you have to know more about Hilchas Malicha, Hadacha, if you rinse off the blood, sometimes under certain circumstances, you might be able to eat it even without Malicha. But again, as far as this business about Chisaron Kiss, not sure I understand that point over here. All right, let's move on. Tana Rabbanan, Dag Moliach, Mutter L'Taltalo. So he's got salted fish, and that's Mutter B'Taltal, because that's Roy L'Achila. You know, it's, even though it's not cooked, like you could have herring, right, it's salted. So the salting already makes it edible. I guess you'd call it sushi. Dag tofel, also l'taltalo. But if you're talking about raw fish without salting it, then it's not edible and therefore it's muktza. Basar, in the case of meat, and it's raw, bein tofel bein moliach, even if you salt it, no, I'm sorry, even if it's not salted, is muta l'taltalo. Now, this is very interesting, because until now, we've been assuming that when it comes to unsalted meat, it's not roi l'achila. Ah, but we're now going to reflect the sheet of Rav Huna. And Rav Huna, with regard to tiltul, accepts the sheet of Rav Shimon, and therefore it's not muktza. Okay. Now, it could be that although this meat in its raw state, unsalted, is not edible for human beings, but as we said before, you could feed it to an animal. And that's enough, according to Rav Shimon, to remove the Issur Tiltul Muktzah. Tana Rabbanan, we learned in a Braisa, Metaltalin Esat Somos, you're allowed to move bones on Shabbos, Mipnei Shehu Machol L'Klovim, because this is food for dogs, so that dogs will be able to eat bones. He's not talking about cooked bones. I think he's talking about raw bones. Okay. Then, here on the top of Kuf Chav Ches Amid Beis, Basa Tafuach. Oh, we haven't had anything about Basa Tafuach. And that's also Mutav Etiltul. Why? Bibnei Shu Machal Achaya. So these are larger animals, and they'll eat Basa Tafuach. Basa Tafuach, he says Masriach, which means it's spoiled meat. So you could feed spoiled meat to a lion, or a tiger, I don't know what, some sort of big animal, a chaya, and the animal will devour it. And that's enough to make it ois mukt, it's non-mukt. Mayim magulin, he left water exposed overnight. We don't drink that water because maybe a nachash, some serpent, left his venom in the water. So it's a danger to drink that water. Nevertheless, it's mutar b'tiltul. Why? Mipnei shem re'uyim l'chatul. So if you want to give water to a cat, you're allowed to give water even though it stayed overnight, and it's not going to harm the cat. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, Kol Atzmon Asurim L'Shoson Mipnei HaSakon. So if Shimon Gamliel goes a step further, and he says, get rid of this water. You're not allowed to even maintain it in your house, because it's so dangerous. Now, does that have any impact on Mukta? And the answer is, I think, yes, it does. Because anything that you have to get rid of, and you're not allowed to keep it in your house, is by definition mukta. Okay. Now we're up to the Mishnah on line 4 here on Kuf Chav Ches Amid Beis. There's another Mishnah later on. Let's do this one. Kofen Es HaSal, you're allowed to turn over a basket Lifnei Ha'efrochim, in front of the chicks. And why are you allowed to do that? Because Kidei She'yalu V'yeridu. So there's a chicken coop, and you want to make it easier for the chicks to get into the coop, so you put a step. What's a step? The step is a basket. Now, anything that's designated for the use of live animals, that animals should use it, or birds, is muktzah. So the question that we want to ask here is, why is he allowed to move a basket for the facilitate the afrokim getting up and down in and out of the chicken coop, when that should be a classic isa tiltul? That's muktzah because it's designated for the animals. Anything you designate for the use of the animals is muktzah. And apparently, there's a special leniency here in this Mishnah that they were matir to take a sal and use it for something that is muktzah, meaning for an animal. And the question is, what was the reason why they were lenient over here in this case? So one is permitted on Shabbos to move a basket for the sake of muktzah, which means the chicks are muktzah, the animal is muktzah. And the truth is that we had a Gemara back in Parakira, according to Rabbi Yitzchak, you're not allowed to move something for the sake of muktzah. So just like you're not allowed to enjoy an animal and benefit from an animal because that's muktzah, you can't put a kli for the sake of an animal. So what are we going to do with this Mishnah? So the Gemara back in Kira says that this Mishnah is referring to a case where one wished, he wanted to move muktzah for some permissible purpose, and the Mishnah is telling us that once he's moving the utensil, then he can do with it whatever he wants. Whatever he wants. So that he can use it even for the sake of an animal. So we're going to talk about a case where he wished to move the utensil for a permissible purpose. Once it's in his hand already, he can put it down wherever he wants. And that's the case, according to Rabbi Yitzchak, of Kofin and Sassal Bifnei HaEfrochin. Now we have a case in the Mishnah of Tarnagolas Shebarcha. So we have a chicken, that a live chicken that ran away from the house. And here I have a footnote. He says that we're not sure why the Mishnah is talking about this specific case of a Tarnagolas Shebarcha, because Lechora, as we'll soon see, the halacha, the rule of this Mishnah has nothing to do with the fact that this chicken ran away. It says, dochin, which means dochafin, you could push it, osa biyadayim, so you could push this chicken from the back, achatikonais, until it goes wherever you want. And we're not afraid that maybe, you know, he'll, in other words, if he would push it from the front, apparently, lifnim. So maybe the reason why the Mishnah mentions that it ran out of the house is to tell you that if you don't push it, you're going to lose it. It's going to just fly away. You'll never get it back. So therefore, we're going to allow you to push it inside the house. Why? To avoid financial loss. This might have something to do with that Rav Chisda that we spoke about in the case of duck meat that's outside in the sun. But anyway, we see that there's an important factor here of hefseid mamon, to prevent loss of property, that is going to be a mitigating circumstance to be more lenient as far as tiltul muktz is concerned. Okay. Now the Mishnah Berurah has a chiddush here. He wants to say kol shkein, how much more so, mutar l'dchosa l'bayis, you're allowed to push it into the house in order to feed it so that it shouldn't suffer. So this is really interesting that for those who own animals, there's a certain leniency for the sake of the animal, and also because of the sake of the owner of the animal that might suffer a financial loss. Okay. Fine. So now we said that a hen that escaped, we could push her until she enters into the house. Midadadin agolim usyachim. We can help calves and young donkeys walk. And once again, we seem to be having direct contact with these animals by taking hold of the animal's neck or the side of the animal and pushing it so that it moves its legs. And normally, we don't allow contact with an animal because an animal is muktza. But if we walk the animal this way, so he's only moving a portion of the muktza, because ultimately the animal is standing on its own 2 feet, and the Mishnah allows you to do so if you're only if you're only moving it in a minimal way. And the reason for this is because of Tzar Balei Chaim. So in the case of Tzar Balei Chaim, we're allowed to hold on to the neck of the animal or its side and help it, guide it, so that it could walk on its own. And even though normally we don't allow moving animals, and that's included under the Iser Tiltul in Mukta, but nevertheless here they were matir in the case of Ridias Agolim Usyachim Mishum Tzar Balei Chaim. Next, Isha Medadada Es Bina. So now we're talking about a child in Rishus HaRabim, and she is going to lead the child by being medadet. In other words, she holds on to the child's arms from behind, and she helps the child that it shouldn't walk. There's no eruv. So she's out there in Rishus HaRabim. And hopefully the child is old enough that it could walk on its own feet. It needs this help of the mother that's guiding the child by holding on to its two arms on one side of the other. And apparently the chiddush of this Mishnah is that this is not considered carrying in Rishus HaRabim. You're just helping the child walk on its own. And maybe in a normal case we would not allow that because we're always afraid that she might come to carry the child. But nevertheless, since the child needs this, we're going to allow it because she's helping the child walk and she's not carrying the child. Omar Rav Yehuda Masai, under what circumstances, what conditions have to be met in order to permit a woman to hold on to the arms of her child and help him walk in Rosh Hashanah? Bisman shunotel achas umeniach achas. He's lifting up one leg and putting down another leg. Aval imoye gorer, if he's only dragging his feet, he can't lift up his foot, asur, because that's considered that she's carrying. If the child was very, very young, and the child's not capable of walking on its own, then I would say that's for sure prohibited. Here we're allowing it because the child is old enough and mature enough to put 1 foot forward and 1 foot back. Now back on Daf Tzadi Dalet, we have a sugya called Achai Noseis Atzmo, and that means that a live person or an animal carries himself. However, this is a case of a katan who's of a very young age, and how young is the child? Meaning, I don't mean age-wise, but what is the child capable of doing? So here, Rabbi Yehuda is saying that if the child is incapable of walking, the child can only drag its feet if you drag it along, then we no longer apply the principle of chai nosei satsmo. Because right now, in the present situation, the child cannot carry himself. But if, on the other hand, she's helping the child to put 1 foot down here and 1 foot down there, that's okay. Then we could say she's only helping the child, but the child ultimately is walking on his own 2 feet. That's the first Mishnah on the Amar Rabbi Yehuda Marav, Behema Shenufla Lamas Mayim. If an animal falls into water on Shabbos, and it's very important to get the animal out of the water, Mevi Karim Uksasos, he can bring pillows and cushions, Umeniach Tachtov, and he can insert it underneath the animal, so that that'll help the animal rise up and get out onto dry land. Vim also, and if the animal is able to climb onto these pillows and project itself onto dry land, then that's fine, and there's no prohibition here. In other words, we would have thought that in this case, since he's prodding the animal, and again he's moving karam uksusos in order to put it underneath the animal, that is a muktza problem. And we also have a principle called ein asu levatel klime chono, which means you're not allowed to create muktza out of non-muktza on Shabbos. Here, by putting it under the animal, he's really making it into muktza. So why is this mutter? So he quotes the Chasam Sofer, Hatam Sheskila Gemara Bedin Bitul Klime Chano. Okay, fine. Alright, so he doesn't tell you exactly why this is mutter. Let's just see if we can find anything here in the notes. He's not allowed to physically lift up the animal. The animal is muktza, but he's allowed to move and prepare these pillows and cushions, place it underneath the animal, because the cushions and the pillows are not muktza, and the animal is going to step up onto these pillows and get ourselves out of the water. Very similar to our Mishnah that allows you to put a basket in front of the chicks so that the chicks could climb onto the basket to get into the chicken coop. Meisve, yeah.
No concept of pikuach nefesh for an animal.
Well,
like, therefore, care would be allowed.
I wouldn't call it pikuach nefesh. I would call it tsar bali chayim.
Right,
tsar bali chayim. So it could be that there's a tsar bali chayim element here in the equation. I'm going to reserve judgment until we see the next piece of Gemara. The Gemara says the following: Meisve, we have Akash on Rabbi Yudom Arav, we have a brisa that says Behema Shenofla Li Amas Mayim, the animal fell into a stream of water. Ose La Parnosa, you're not letting haul the animal out of the water, but rather you could feed the animal until after Shabbos. Bimkoma, you know, leave the animal exactly where it is. But you're allowed to feed it bishvil shalot tomus, so you guarantee the animal will survive. Parnosa in karamuksosos lo, the brice only allowed you to feed the animal in its place, but it did not allow you to cushion the animal in such a way that the animal could jump out, could climb up onto these cushions, and jump out onto dry land. So isn't this brice a contradiction to Rabbi Yehuda Merav, who allows you to put the cushions under the animal? Lo kasha. Ha di efshar biparnosa. Ha di efshar liparnosa. If you could feed the animal, then we'd rather you feed the animal where it is, and then after Shabbos we'll figure out how to haul the animal up from the stream of water. But if on the other hand you cannot feed the animal, which is called Bishvil, which is called Parnasa Bishvil Shalotomus, then we're going to allow you in that case to use Karavuk Susos. Like you said before, it's like a Pikuch Nefesh. So Parnasa in, if you can guarantee that the animal will survive by feeding it, then Karavuk Susos lo. That's what the Brisa means, that we're not going to allow you to put these cushions under the animal, because you can easily just feed the animal. And that's called Efshar B'Parnosa. But in the case of Rav, who allowed you to put the pillows underneath the animal, that's a case of the Efshar L'Parnosa, that there's no way, let's say the water is very deep, for example, and you can't give it food. You know, the food will not reach the animal. The animal can't reach the food. So the animal now is in a state of very great distress. It's sort of drowning in a stream of water. It cannot receive any parnosa. It cannot have access to the food that you're giving it. Is then, in such a case, Rav is going to allow you, since it's the Efshel parnosa, to take cushions and cushion the animals such a way to get it out of the stream. Now the Gemara says, Efshar b'parnosa in, when the Brisa says that you're not allowed to do anything more than feed the animal, it's because it's possible to feed the animal. So you're not allowed to put the karma ksusas under the animal. Elo, but if there's no possibility of feeding the animal, as we said before, the water is so deep, is therefore maybe karma ksusas uviniach tachto. Then he's allowed to bring the pillows and the cushions and put it underneath the animal. Now the Gemara asks another kash on Rav, who allowed you to put these pillows underneath the animal. V'ha k'mevatel kli meichano. This is what we mentioned before, that you're taking a utensil, in this case a pillow, which is not mukta, and you're making it into mukta. You are destroying the hachana of the kli. And we have a principle, which is established back in Perikiro, that osu levatel kli meichano. Like, for example, let's say you have a lamp that's lit on Shabbos, and there are sparks that are coming out of this lamp, and they're about to hit the ground and maybe burn up the ground. If you were to take a utensil and put it underneath to catch the, let's say, a utensil with water in it, to capture these nitzotos, that would be considered mevatel kli meichano. So how are you allowed, asks the Gemara, according to Rav, to put these pillows underneath the behema? He's being gorim now that it become mukta, because once it's underneath the animal, then it's osav tiltul. Why? We have a principle of mukta called abasis ledavara osur. If you have something that serves as a base for something else, and here the animal is going to sit itself on the karmuk susos in order to sort of lift itself out of the water, then the karmuk susos become what we call basis ledovra asur. And now we should apply the principle of asur levatel klimei chano. You have taken karmuk susos, which in and of themselves, they are mutter betiltul, and now by making them a bosses to the animal, they become mukta. That's called bitul kli meichano. So how is it that Rav would allow you to do this, to be mevatel kli meichano? Now I just want to point out here, he has a note in the name of the Rashba, that if we go back to the Mishnah of the basket, and when he puts the basket down so the birds, the chicks, could get on the basket and then climb into the chicken coop, then once again, that should be mevatel kli meichano, because now you've designated the basket for the service to the sake of the efrochim, and that's exactly like our case where you designate the pillows for the animal that's in the stream. See, he says that ein efrochim omdim al asal el bizman muot. He says the efrochim, when they climb onto this basket and use it as a step, that's only for a short period of time. V'yochal africham b'chol shah sheyirtze. If he wants to shoo them away, he could do so. Aval kan, but here when he puts the karmu ksusos underneath the animal, we assume that there's a possibility that he won't be able to get the animal out of this stream of water. V'lotala behema me'amayim. V'yeh tzorech laniach shom hakorim kol hayom. You know, the animal might have to be sitting on these cushions for the entire day of Shabbos. And that's called mevatel kli meichano. Mashenki, in the basket case, where the efrochim go on and off, that's not considered mevatel kli meichano. So Gemara answers, Savar, meaning Rav holds about the Isur Mevatel Kli Meichano, that's only Durabonon. And Sarba Lechaim Do Raisa. So here's the difference. For a human being, will violate even a Melacha Do Raisa. But for an animal, to save an animal, will only violate a Durabonon. Right? So it's not that animals aren't meaningful. You know, today, everybody has to be meaningful, right? So the animal is meaningful, but we cannot override a doraisa for the sake of an animal. So Tzar Balei Chaim is doraisa. In a minute we'll see where we derive that from in the Torah. The Asi doraisa v'dochi derabbanan. So Rav holds that in the light of this doraisa, which obligates us to save the animal, we can violate an isu derabbanan of being mevatel kli mehechano. Now, what's the source for Tzar Balei Chaim? This is a parasha in Shmos, in Parashas Mishpatim, and it says, Azov tazov imo, that you try to help the animal when it's crushed from its burden, which is called prika. The mitzvah prika means to unload the animal from its burden. And that's going to prevent tzar. And the Torah obligates us to do so, hence we have a source in the Torah for Tzar Balei Chaim Doraisa. And this will trump a Issa Derabbanan of Mevatel Kli Mehechano. Okay. Tarnagolas Shebarcha. So we said you're allowed to push this tarnagolas back into the house when it's running away. And the Gemara adds the following diuk. Dochin in me dadidin lo. That although the Mishnah allows us to push the tarnagolas that ran away from behind, but it doesn't allow us to grab on to the tarnagolas on its two sides of its body in order to try to guide it that it should be able to walk on its own. And that far we're not going to go, and that's not going to be mut. Tanita lahad de tana rabbanan, and a similar din we derive from a braisa, and the braisa says, midad din behema chayavi of bechotzer avaloes hatarnagolas. That if you have a behema, which is, you know, a serious-sized animal, chaya, and an oaf, which is like a duck, and it's located in a chotzer, then under those conditions, you'd be allowed to be medadet. Why? Because you're not in a rishus harabim. Certainly in a Rishus Rabim, Ledadeid would be Asur, because he might lift them up off the ground, he might carry them for Amos Rishus Rabim. We're not going to allow that. But if we're in a Chatzer, which is basically a Rishus HaYochid, at least on a Doraisa level, then we're going to allow you to do Medadadin. Avalos HaTarnagolas. But, you know, we're prejudiced against chickens. Well, what prejudice do we have against chickens? Tarnagolas might time below. What's the difference here between a chicken and all the other animals, including a duck that we've mentioned before? Why should we be more machmir and strict with regard to chickens? Amar Abaye. By the way, a female chicken, I think, is called a hen, right? If I'm not mistaken. Okay. Anyway, Amar Abaye, mishum de makpiyo nafsha. When he grabs onto the wings, then she'll lift herself off the ground, and therefore he's not just helping her walk, but he's actually carrying her, because when she lifts herself off the ground, he's carrying her. And that's called mukta. I'm just not sure why that doesn't apply to other birds. It would seem to me that we should certainly apply this to other birds. He says, "Kasher ochas in osa b'tzidehu umoded in osa, he magvias asum in a karka nimtza shemetaltula tiltul gomur v'asum yishumukta." Right, medadadin was always something that we were more lenient because it's like you're only partially moving it; it's really standing on its own 2 feet. Here, in the case of the tarnagolas, when you were to grab it by its body and move it from side to side, it's going to inevitably lift up its wings and start flying, and then in effect you're carrying it. So therefore, the only thing we're going to allow you is l'dochvo me'achorov. You can push it from the back, and that's okay. Oh, avol shar balechayim. When it comes to other animals, then you're allowed to hold it from the sides and move it back and forth, because they'll be able to walk on their own feet and they're not going to lift themselves off the ground, and they're not going to start flying, so to speak. Okay, I still don't have a clear answer as to why other ofos. Oh, he says yesh la'akshos. In the footnote, he says me'achar v'dinim shel kol shari ofos shovel ha'golim usyachim. So, what do we say about golim usyachim? Let's just see if I can find that right now. One second. If I don't find it, then we'll just go on for the time being. But I don't know. Maybe that's coming around the bend. But in any event, he writes, "Me'achav edinim shall call shara ofos shavila golem usyachim." This is something that we have to figure out here. We can't. What's the difference between a hen and other birds? There's got to be some explanation here, no? Right, we said that medadad in behema chayav yof avalos atarnagolas. Let me just see again. Other birds. Oh, here's something. Geese do not tend to lift themselves off the ground when you grasp them by their wings. Okay, you have to be.
I think that's the.
Yeah, you have to know more about birds.
Right.
What's it called in English, or ornithology, whatever it's called?
Yeah, something like that. But I think it's that the hen will lift.
Right. In the case of a hen, it's going to lift itself off the ground when you catch it by its wings. But that's not true for geese. Hence, in the case of geese, if you help them walk around in a courtyard, it's permissible. Okay. That's an important note that I was missing. Okay, let's go on. Now, Tani Chada, we have two brisos with regard to medadadin. One says medadadin behema v'chayev yof bechotzer avalo b'rshus harab. So according to the first brisa, you're allowed to help the animal walk around in a courtyard, in a chotzer, but not in a rishus harab. Because if you help the animal in a rishus harabim, then we might come to lift the animal and carry it for amos, which would be a violation of a malach doraisa. But to help the animal walk in a courtyard, where even in the worst case scenario, if you would chas shalom lift up the animal and carry it, you only violated isa drabanan, so then they were more makil for the sake of alleviating the animal from its distress. Okay, fine. V'aisha midadados b'na b'rshus harabim. However, in the case of a woman, we're going to allow her to help her child walk, even in rishus harabim. And here we're not afraid that she might carry the child, because even if chas shalom she would carry the child, we have a principle called hachai nosei asma. And therefore, in the worst case scenario, there's a violation only of the rabbanim. Ve'in tzarech lom v'chotzer. How much more so, it goes without saying, that she's allowed to help the child in a chotzer, which is not a rishus harab. Okay, so that's brisa number one. V'tanya idach. Now we have another brisa. Ein okrim behema v'chay v'yof b'chotzer. We're not allowed to lift up an animal in a chotzer. And we have to understand why that's prohibited. Ah, I'm sorry, this is because of mukta, right? As far as mukta is concerned, we have a problem that animals are mukta. Avol dochin behem sheikonsu. But if they exit from the chatzer, then we're allowed to push them into the chatzer. Because that's not considered a full-fledged tiltul mukta. So now, let's compare the two brisos. Gemara says, ha-gufa kasha. There seems to be a stira between the two brisos. Amrit, on the one hand, in the first brisa, it says, ein okrin. Right? It says that you're allowed to be medade the behema, but you're not allowed to lift up the animal off the ground. Aval diduye medadinon, but to help the animal walk, that you're allowed to do. Hadar amrit, now in the brisa it says, dochin in medadin do. You're not allowed to help the animal directly by holding it. You're only allowed to push it from the back. So what is the deal with helping an animal walk by grabbing it on its sides? One brisa seems to assume we're only going to allow you to push it from the back, and the other brisa seems to assume we're allowed to be medadet. Amar Abaye, seifa son l'tarnagoles. Here we're going to say that a tarnagolus is more of a problem, because tarnagolus, once we start helping it to walk, it might lift itself off the ground, and then you'll end up carrying it. And there, we're going to only allow you to push it from the back. Mashenkin, the brisa that says that you're allowed to be medaded, that's talking about a case of other birds, like geese, or other animals that will not lift themselves up off the ground. So what we have here is the following. If you want to help a child to walk, but you're not carrying him, and the child is able to put its feet down on the ground, one foot after the other, that's mutter to help the child, even in a Rishus HaRabim. As far as an animal, to save it from distress, you can certainly push it from behind, and that you're allowed to do even in a Rishus HaRabim, to bring it back home. However, in the case of a chicken, that's going to be the exception, because if you help the chicken walk, then the chicken might actually lift itself up into the air when you grab its wings. And he says here in the footnote that animals who are in distress may be nudged to safety, even in a public domain, and with the exception of chickens, be helped to walk in a courtyard. Okay, one may not, however, help a chicken walk even in a house, since it tends to lift itself off the ground, which would cause a person to carry mukta. Omar Abaye, another statement of Abaye, Haiman deshochit tarnagoles. If a person slaughters a rooster, I know here it says a rooster before, I called it a hen, not sure if we have to be, a tarnagoles is usually a female, a hen, and a tarnagola is a male chicken, so I don't know, the word rooster maybe is kind of ACDC, it could go either way, it's either male or female, is lichbishinu lekare biara. And what he's allowed to do when he slaughters the tarnagoles, and I don't know if this has anything to do with Shabbos at all, but he's allowed to press its legs to the ground so that the legs buckle and cannot be used in that position by a rooster to pull up and assist in the slaughter. In other words, we want the animal to be totally passive during the shechita. Inami nedel hu medel. Or what we could do here is to lift them entirely off the ground. The dilma, what we're afraid of is manach lehu litarfe bi'ara, lest it plants its claw into the ground and attempts to pull itself away from the shechita, v'yakalu simonim. It's going to dislodge the two simonim which is the Kana and the Veshet, and then it'll passel up the Shechita. So this is another statement, another ruling of Abai in a totally different context, but it also has to do with what we discussed before about the Tarnagolas that lifts itself up, and when it lifts itself off the ground, it might kind of be ochre the simona by planting its claws in the ground, and that would passel up the Shechita. We'll just mention that the Kana and the Veshet, which is the food pipe or the windpipe, are attached to the jaw, and the Shechita of the bird requires that most of one pipe is severed, and probably most of both pipes are severed. But the Shechita is invalid if the pipe is dislodged from the place where it attaches to the jaw. And that's the nervous tension here. So we're up now to the Mishnah, the second Mishnah on Daf Kuf Chav Ches Amid Beis, and this is the mitzvah, the Mishnah of Ein Miyaldinus Abehema Biyont. Just 1 second. Are we missing anything? I think we have it until this point. Maybe we'll just give a little bit of a summary or an introduction. You know, we have until now discussions about muktzah. We had an end discussion about shechita. Now, let's move on to the laws of a yoledes, a woman who's giving birth, either on Shabbos or on Yontif, and we're going to be matir isurim on her behalf. And that's going to be the subject from here on in till we finish this perek. At what point does she have a status as a yoledes? What's the din in a case of an animal that has to give birth? The dinim of yoledes fundamentally divide into three different time periods. There's the time period during pregnancy before she gives birth. She's not yet considered a chola sheyesh bo sakana, but nevertheless, if she has to give birth, and she could possibly come to sakana, therefore allowed to be machal Shabbos under certain circumstances. Number two, during the actual birth, she's considered a chola sheyesh bo sakana, we could be machal Shabbos, and we're going to talk about from at what point and on does she have a din of yoledes. Shivas Yomim, that's the third category, first 7 days after the birth, she's still considered a Chol Sheyesh Bo Sakana. However, certain of her dinim change from the din of the Yoledes herself while she's giving birth, and that's going to be the subject of our sugya. Yoledes is not similar completely to a Chol Sheyesh Bo Sakana because Leda is natural, and it's only, let's say, one of a thousand women that, or a smaller fraction, hopefully, that might be in danger of losing their lives because of Leda. Therefore, there are going to be certain chumras in Leda that don't apply to a classic Chol Sheyesh Bo Sakana. And some say that this is only as far as the Leda itself is concerned. But from the moment that she's considered Yoledes, then she's like any Chol Sheyesh Bo Sakana. I'm sorry, I left out an important word. According to some opinions, before she gives birth, there are different dinim, and she's not completely a chol sheyesh bo sakana. But once she gave birth, then she's yoledes, and according to one school of thought, she has the exact identical dinim as a chol sheyesh bo sakana. The Brisker Rav has a lot of Torah on this in Masechet Yoma, and he divides up different sections and categories and definitions of Chil Shabbos, Tzarech Yoledes. But Amir Tzashem, Bli Neder, tomorrow we'll do this Mishnah, second Mishnah here on Kuf Chav Ches, Amid Beis, and we're about, halfway through the Amid.